Three, two, one. Hey everybody, it's me, the Einstein of Wall Street. We are here with Trade Like Einstein. I am Peter Tuchman, and we're here on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange in the balcony. History is made in this building every single day. Somebody with my long-term experience, I've been here for 137 years, it is my responsibility to help teach you how to navigate this market successfully. Boom!
Hey everybody, it's me, the Einstein of Wall Street from the balcony at the New York Stock Exchange. This is Trade Like Einstein here from Money News Network. I bring you food, finance, fellowship, fun. I bring you all kinds of stuff today. I'm super excited to introduce my new friend, John Murchison here. We're going to get deep into his story, but it's an extraordinary tale and you should all go read up about him. He came down to the stock exchange to meet with someone else. I happened to hijack that because he just looked like someone that was doing something extraordinary and something special. So some of this is going to be a little covert, but we're going to talk about as much as we can handle. John, nice to meet you. Welcome to the show.
Love cool. It.
So give us a look. You've obviously done a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
There's your story about working in the beginning with NSA and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Tell me what you can tell me about your sort of your beginning and how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, you know, I'm from Buffalo, New York originally, and I came down to play tennis for University of Maryland from, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. And I was a marketing major. I had no idea what I was going to do. And my brother was in tech, and he got me some Cisco books, and that and I self-taught, and that was basically learning network engineering, got me my foot in the door at the National Security Agency. Okay. I quickly pivoted from that.
That's not like a direct door to go open, right?
That was a hard one. They didn't want to interview me at all because I wasn't a computer science major.
Right.
But it turns out networking fundamentals are one of the most important things if you're going to do cybersecurity and and kind of.
But they obviously saw something. I mean, you have you just give off that kind of a vibe that there's something special going on.
Yeah. So long story short, I made it in there, and I was part of our collection unit, but where we use cyber means, you know, so more an offensive kind of cyber operation, and really our job, we get intelligence priorities and we have to figure out how to get the data one way or another.
Explain to me. Sorry to interrupt you, though. So National Security Association, what is that?
Agency.
Agency. Yeah. Okay. And so that is a government agency.
It's a federal government agency.
It's a federal, okay. And is there a domestic part to it? Is there a global part to it? I mean, I'm just thinking about the words, the cybersecurity was not part of my world growing up.
Yeah.
And you're younger than I am. But at what point did this suddenly become a thing? Obviously, it's internet related. I mean, obviously, in the old days, it was like, you know, look, my uncle, my parents are Holocaust survivors. They came here after the war. My uncle had left Eastern Europe and gone to Palestine in the early part of this century, ended up becoming a spy.
Right.
He was a double agent for the English and the Palestinians, went on to become a consul general to Israel. But he, you know, think about it. He was the kind of guy who was like I had these visions. He would tell me stories about being in Malta wearing like a raincoat and meeting guys on corners and doing these covert espionage type of situations where you'd have to meet people. He was a spy.
Yeah.
So that's what our vision is, whether it's James Bondish or Humphrey Bogart or whatnot, of what goes on under the curtain.
Sure.
Right. So when did it?
So, I mean, NSA has been around forever. And what you're describing is what we call human operations, human intelligence.
Operations.
So that's the domain of CIA.
Okay. Oh, that's CIA. Okay,
that's CIA, Now, obviously, tech is in all of this now, but NSA's primary domain, and it's all foreign-facing, to be clear.
Okay.
So that they don't really play
so we're not looking at domestic terrorism or anything like that?
No, okay, not. That's the FBI. Obviously, there's cooperation, for sure. And DHS, Department of Homeland Security.
Right.
But NSA's primary job is to use signal intelligence. So whether it's, you know, satellite, you know, ground communications, cyber. So it's actually the largest intelligence agency.
Okay.
And
obviously with the advent of the internet and with all the new tech that's come into our world now, probably 30 years-ish, even though internet is much less than that, that obviously brought this to a whole nother level.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It went from being human to human to being
almost
cyber in
totally unmanageable, the volumes of data you're dealing with.
Right.
And so, you know, really, NSA has a few primary functions. One of them, a lot of people don't know, they're in charge of nuclear weapons command control code, the cryptography that goes with it.
Okay.
But they have a defensive component where they serve the rest of the DOD on cybersecurity and other things like that.
Right.
But what it's famous for is really the collection arm. So the vast majority of what's in a presidential daily brief generally comes from SIGINT means.
Okay.
So it's where you can get some of the highest fidelity intelligence in the world. And so it's an absolute phenomenal institution with great humans, and I miss it every day.
So it's fascinating to say, because what just came to me was and we're not going to get political here at all, but my memory was that Donald Trump chose not to sit in on those morning meetings. I mean, you always think of the president, especially in recent years. Obviously, I mean, you think about it. You had World War I, World War II. Then there was the Korean War and whatnot. But then the world changed, and there was a period where things were going on under the cloak for a long time, but it wasn't until we started seeing, let's say, the Iran-Iraq war and things like that, where things really escalated, and 9/11 and whatnot, where we started to see, you know, I mean, there was the Eastern Bloc, Western Bloc, that breakdown and whatnot. Yep. But obviously over the last, I don't know, it's time has sort of lost itself, right? Yep. I'm still in July, let alone what's gone on over the last 20 years. But relative to security and our relationship to the rest of the world, things obviously are escalating in an exponential fashion, right? And data is so key, right? I mean, explain to me on a day-to-day basis when you were doing that, what was involved in that collection of data? I mean, obviously, it's, you said satellites and stuff like that, but
yeah, I mean, I would say I have to be pretty careful on kind of what I describe. I don't want to go to jail, but really at the end of the day, like, there's a lot of data, you know, that sits on computers and networks and you name it, that can inform policymakers once it's distilled and, you know, translated and made sense. So, you know, if you think about it in one way, offensive cyber attacks by ransomware gangs is all basically a new school version of extortion.
Right.
You know, when you get on the government side, you're not necessarily doing that stuff, obviously. Right. You're more trying to collect data to inform an intelligence need or priority, ultimately to feed the White House and other agencies. And to help policymakers make decisions. I mean,
so we started to talk about it. Sorry to interrupt you again. There's so much going on and my mind is spinning. We're here on the floor of the stock exchange. Obviously, look, in the old days when I started working here, and I'm not that old, we did everything on paper. There was no technology here at all. And it's kind of fascinating. There was a sort of a tiered system here. On the floor, you had, so there's no education to become a broker. This is a seat on the stock exchange. So there's no education for this. You can't go to school to become a broker. The way it worked historically is you came down to the floor, you started as a squad. A squad would be a runner. Somebody who you raised your hand, they wore a jacket to demarcate their job. They made $127
like an aircraft
a week. Exactly, right. You're the lowest guy. You'd raise your hand, I'd be in a crowd trading, I'd scream squad. He'd grab the paper, run it from where I am to the post. That information would then be disseminated up. And then you had people who were called reporters. Reporters were the people who documented the trade. I bought 100 shares of IBM at 127 and a quarter. There was a little computer card like we do now with lottery or the SATs, where you'd write down who bought, who sold, the price, the time it happened.
Right.
And curiously enough, it was kind of the beginning of the blockchain, because it was a ledger.
Yeah.
This was how we knew what traded. Millions of shares traded every day. I was here actually in 1986. It was the biggest day in history. We traded 183 million shares. That had gone up from 10 million. Today we trade 1 to 3 billion shares a day. So that is amazing. And we couldn't do it without the technology we have today. But anyway, there was no technology involved in this. This was open outcry, screaming and yelling, people writing on paper and whatnot. Obviously, now the whole world is just has been inundated with the benefits of technology and the fear around technology and what it can do. There are bad actors, there are good actors. Oh, yeah. But here on the stock exchange, we trade billions of shares globally. These are companies that, I mean, we saw it during COVID. We saw it during 9/11. We closed for the first time ever at 9/11 for a week.
Right.
When we closed, it was before we did anything with technology here. So basically, all markets closed around the world around that week. And so they had never dealt with that kind of situation before. But what it made them do was they actually it's my understanding, they built a mirror image of the Stock Exchange after 9/11 in the event of such a thing happening again, where we were actually closed. They built a mirror version of this place with exactly everything in place, somewhere in New Jersey, right? And so that, God forbid, something like that happened, we could hit a switch and we could be trading over there. They had told us that, you know, that you'd go over to some other place and we'd be trading and whatnot. But I'm saying all this to say that there, as we said, there are bad actors. There are people who literally could, we saw it happen in COVID, where we actually had to shut down. We did have all of this technology put in place already after 9/11, that in the event of such a situation globally, we could trade electronically off floor.
Right.
And we were able to do that, and it worked beautifully.
It's incredible.
Okay, so that's just dealing with incoming incoming controversy or incoming problems. But obviously there are people, and I don't want to open doors with this. Don't give anybody ideas. But think about it. If people were able to break through the wall here and be able to mess with our computers or affect the price of stocks or shut stocks down or hack what we do here or whatnot. Yeah. I mean, is that, are we going up against, I mean, are things getting really scary as far as that goes? Because you look, as a layperson within your field, I'm always thinking about, look, my phone gets hacked. I get emails every day from it says it's from my bank. I know it's not my bank. You know, I once made the mistake of hitting a link that I shouldn't have hit within minutes. All of my social media was compromised and I was in deep, and there was nowhere to go with it.
Yeah.
To think about that globally and what, give me a little insight into that.
This is happening every day, every day to companies. I mean, we saw MGM, right? They have a huge cybersecurity budget and still lost $100 million. The reality is just-in-time production, logistics, real-time trading, there's only one thing that enables it, which is network computer systems and applications. And so the biggest kind of fear for something like this would be a ransomware attack would be one. And typically ransomware operators today now will steal a bunch of data and encrypt
and
in case
hold,
you
and
have
then hold it hostage.
And they'll threaten to release, you know, kind of sensitive data. I would say for an institution like this as well, though, you always have to think in a time of conflict, this would be a huge target for a nation state to just try and not ransom or extort you, but take it out, you know? So I'm sure an incredible amount of work goes in, you know, to securing.
Well, that was also a fear that people felt around 9/11 that we were going to be, I mean, it was literally the World Trade Center is a few blocks away. That scene that you see when you see the buildings fall was literally on Broad Street. So people's fear was when we went into lockdown that day, and I was here that day, and it was quite a devastating experience. We went into full lockdown.
Right.
We were inside. We finally got released from the building around 11 o'clock. But that was our fear that this was going to be the target.
I mean, it's when you have huge institutions like this that, I mean, billions of shares being traded a day, like this is anything that's real time or just in time tends to go down the hardest when there, when there's an attack. I mean, the interesting trend that we're seeing right now, though, is you know, we're the first company to do what we call managed detection response. Basically,
managed
So we run a 24/7 threat ops center, staff of people. We deploy our software. If we see bad guys, we take them out before they ransom or. But what's happened is a huge shift when all your servers used to be on-premise, are moving to the cloud. And so I think we
There's not a geographical spot that can get hit.
So it is totally, the game is changing kind of under our feet. And so you still have on-prem traditional ransomware, but what's going on now is, you know, we kind of saw this coming. We released kind of the first product to secure Microsoft 365.
I got to interrupt you because I didn't even realize. So you have a company that deals with this, that has built software around cyber. So let's talk about it. Tell me the name of the company.
Blackpoint.
We kind of got we got right wrapped up into it.
But we love the spy stuff.
It's a perfect way to introduce what you do, what the company's name is, and what it's about.
So, you know, having kind of been the bad guy for the team, Blackpoint Cyber.
Blackpoint Cyber, okay.
I got an opportunity to build what I would want to use, having been kind of the aggressor to do defense. And so we spent a lot of years building it, but in a nutshell, we have a whole suite of software that protects on-prem cloud workflows, exposure management.
From a corporate point of view, or it can be individuals?
Corporate.
It's corporate.
Companies.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And so then we wrap that with a 24/7 SOC. So companies pay us, we deploy our software.
Right.
We monitor, and it, you know, within 15 minutes usually is our time from, you know, if a bad guy gets in, we're able to figure out what he's doing.
Right.
And we take them out before they're able to ransomware. But the trend that's kind of changed right now is we're the first company to release managed detection response for Microsoft 365, Azure, Google Workspace. Those attacks are 5-1 to the on-prem right now.
Okay.
We're doing hundreds.
I'm a novice. What does that mean?
So if you've used Microsoft 365, for example, you have Teams, you have all this stuff, you know, hosts in the cloud. Bad guys at the end of the day want to take over privileged accounts, period. I mean, anything.
And are they actually sitting there actively? Are there people, individuals, and groups around the world that are actually sitting there? You have this vision of that. I don't know whether it was a movie I saw or what, where it was like the bots on Twitter, and there's just hundreds of fake accounts, and people are doing just is it like that? It's just like you'd see in a movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably you know, every time I see a movie and there's a computer screen, it still beeps and you know, slowly for the drama, but. So it's a little more vanilla and boring than that. Okay. But there's groups called initial access brokers.
Okay.
Their job is to kind of get initial break into a company and steal passwords and creds. They sell that off to ransomware operators who then will take over that access and those creds. They'll hack, spread through the network, steal data, basically deploy ransomware to encrypt your machines.
Right.
And then they contact you and request payment in Bitcoin.
Right.
And
this is happening on a daily basis.
Oh,
we only hear about the big ones, right? You know, we've heard about them this year. There've been a few big hacks, but this is happening a lot more than
this is happening many times a day in the United States alone. You know, just we're doing dozens of saves a week that would turn into mass ransom. And we're doing hundreds of saves on the cloud side, because if you think about it for a second, you can do the initial access broker thing. Ransomware guys have to come in. It takes a while to kind of move through a network sometimes, depending on the configuration. And then you got to deal with, you know, the incident response company, the lords. You got to teach them a lot of times how to pay in Bitcoin. They have help desks.
Yeah.
Right.
I did that. I got hacked, and I actually paid a guy in Turkey in Bitcoin to give me my stuff back.
Yeah.
And I'm just some schmag. Yeah. I mean, I'm nobody, but somebody wanted to get into my space. He hacked my Instagram. I have a big platform, but that's not a big deal. But literally he wanted me to pay him first through Western Union, then through Bitcoin. And I was sitting there so powerless over this.
Yeah.
So as a corporate entity to feel that powerless, that's why you're here. And that's why people need you more than ever. Blackpoint, unbelievable. So tell me more. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So, you know, we really set out, we're a whole indirect go-to-market. So we sell through managed IT service providers and distributors and whatnot. But really, at the end of the day, we're trying to kind of take most of the security workload off the IT provider.
Right.
We take care of that. We got a best track record in the world at doing this right now. And then we focus on selling together. Right. It's kind of called the Green Beret go-to-market model. So, you know, and so really for us, you just have to watch the migration of where data is being hosted and where authentication happens.
Right.
And so the area now, the hacker can do all this work in an on-prem situation network.
Right.
Or they can take over your cloud account, steal data. They don't have to encrypt anything. It's way faster time to joy. And trick maybe finance to wiring money to the wrong place. That's why you're seeing 5 times more cloud attacks than on-prem now. The barrier to entry and joy and money for them is just less.
What are the red flags that people, you know, that companies, so obviously people start, every corporation now has an IT department. Mm-hmm. There are people who are monitoring what's coming in and what's going out data-wise within a corporation. And then suddenly an IT guy sees some red flags and they go, what's going on? They try to get to the host of that and they see something they don't like, they call you.
No, it's different.
Oh, okay.
We do all that. We instrument the entire network, your entire cloud. All this data comes into us.
Right.
We do it.
But that's once I've initiated my relationship with you.
Yes, correct.
Right.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have to know there's a problem or, I mean, I would think eventually everybody's going to need you.
I think.
That's why you're going to be going public here at the New York Stock Exchange.
Yeah.
Right. Giddy up on that.
Hell yeah. At the end of the day, the more and more we get relying on this tech, you're going to have to spend more money to secure it. We get the benefits from all of it, but it also, there's not many companies in 2024 that can operate when their IT network's down, cloud or on-prem. And so, you know, I think for us, you know, we're continuing to add technologies. Because what's going on, and you've seen big companies, they sell something called, security incident event management, SIEMs, so the Splunks of the world and that type of right. stuff. That has always been the way, and even today.
Is that kind of like malware?
No, it's they're big log collectors. So they're pulling logs off your network devices, right. your PCs, you name it. I really think that's last decade's technology. Right. Almost every major company you've ever seen breached ran that technology. Okay. But if you think about terabytes of logs coming in every week,
right?
You're having to write algorithms to sort through it. And then you have to jump to other tools to mount a response.
Right.
When a bad guy has credentials and he knows you're like an administrator, you're like T-minus 20 minutes to mass ransom. Wow. And so we had to build a platform that does like live network mapping, and the alerts come in live. They get scored and they're super actionable, so we can take really fast response. So we're not looking at raw logs. The log methodology has never worked. It's just really tied to compliance though, because every compliance framework, and I think this is an issue in our industry. A lot of these compliance frameworks are all well-intentioned, but they push people towards a certain tech stack that makes them compliant. That's a cost of doing business. But I've never seen a hacker in my life care if you're compliant
if you're
or not.
Compliant,
they care
of course
did,
not.
Did you miss the patch? Did, you know, and right. so I think as an industry, we've got pushed towards these technologies. Their track record isn't good, but the compliance driver keeps us working on it. And this is still, to me, why you see, I mean, you look at really large companies. I mean, Colonial Pipeline, for example. I don't know if you remember that attack, but
that was a was it one of the oil pipelines from Canada to here or something?
A gas pipeline in
gas
in, pipe, in,
right.
In,
it
in
got the, hacked right.
In
that
the
was
East
this
Coast.
Year, last year, 2023.
What really happened? So, in we call these like you have operational technology networks, OT. So think SCADA and all that kind of you know where computers meet something physical,
right?
And then you have the corporate network. Well, the attack was actually on the corporate network.
Okay.
But they had to shut down the pipeline because all the telemetry on flow, how you're going to bill someone, where all this comes from,
right.
has to come into the corporate side. So even...
So
even,
they were going to lose out if they did not get a handle on this. It wasn't about the fact that they may be jeopardizing the physicalness of the oil gas pipeline, but the fact that they wouldn't be charging.
It was the back...
Right, it was the...
I'm sure there's more than just the charging, but it's the back office.
Right, office.
And that's what we don't think about. We sometimes worry about these big, shouty SCADA attacks open, a bridge.
Right. Understood.
But the reality
but
is
there's all the back office stuff.
The back office stuff is also can cause a lot of damage.
Yeah,
this world's changing. We have a massive IT personnel shortage.
Okay.
And a way worse security shortage. Because in my opinion, you can't be a lead at cybersecurity unless you're a lead at IT fundamentals. It's like any sport. You have to master fundamentals.
Right.
And so I think the reason our market is growing so fast and there's so much interest in managed detection response is because, they're already a huge shortage. And also, if you're a CISO, do you like a chief information security officer?
I don't even own a computer, so you're talking to a complete...
I'm
technologically challenged.
Yeah, I mean, I would say there's a couple of things going on. You could try to build this empire internally, but boy, it's also nice to have an external throat to choke, Do you want to take all that risk on? And so another thing is when you get to secure, thousands and thousands of networks like we do, we see a lot more than a single entity would. And so it makes you faster at responding because ransomware is very much like an ambush.
Right.
And if you don't have a really good intelligence picture and a clear plan to respond really fast and decisively, you'll be a victim.
So what I love that because that's really exciting for me. I am often asked by young people. I run an academy to teach young people technical analysis and learn how to trade the stock market. It's incredible. Then we started recently, obviously, talking about AI and how, there's obviously the fear that AI is going to outsource the human being in so many different ways. And I've done a lot of work. There's a guy named Dan Ives who I'm doing a new YouTube channel called Einstein and Ives. He's one of the top tech analysts in the world. And he's my AI guru.
Yeah.
And he told me, he said, we need not worry about that. We need to look at the cup half full, not cup half empty.
Yeah.
And how much opportunity and how this is that's what I wanted to talk to you about. This is, we are fast tracking. So this is coming out of him. He had just come back from the CES show in Vegas.
Right.
And he said, we are on a fast track. NVIDIA, which is obviously the stock of the moment. It's traded from 108 to 750 over the last year. It is the AI stock of the century. And he said, look, these guys, Microsoft, NVIDIA, are spending trillions of dollars. This is a revolution that's going on here.
It is.
It's a fast track revolution. And he said, we're going to be living the life of the Jetsons and Dick Tracy, not in 2030 or 2050, yeah. but in 2025.
Right.
We're going to have robots in our house and flying cars within the next couple of years. And that's major.
Yeah.
How is that going? What, yeah. I just sort of skipped over it. So young people will ask me, if I'm going to get outsourced by AI, where is there going to be opportunity to get jobs? I talk to a lot of 18-year-olds and 20-year-olds
yeah.
who are scared now about what does the future look like? As a human being, am mm-hmm. I going to get outsourced by AI? Where is there opportunity to find jobs? You just told me there's a massive shortage in IT.
Massive.
Get in touch with this guy
yeah.
because that's an opportunity for young people who are desperately searching, where is there going to be job opportunity?
Yeah.
You just said there's a massive shortage.
IT.
And truck drivers. Yeah, go ahead.
Software engineering, programming.
Okay. Software
that's
engineering.
That's not going anywhere.
Okay.
You have to make these algorithms
right.
too. So, you know, I think those areas, they're continuous growth market. Like our market, the managed IT service provider market, is growing at about a 12% CAGR right now, just
right.
organically. Right. And security in there is over 30%, you know, growth year over year. So, you know, I think that area is big. I think AI, it's huge. I can't tip my hand on what we're doing, but,
right.
I think it will absolutely revolutionize how we respond to attacks.
Okay.
But we can't forget the bad guys can use it.
Well, that's
too.
What I want to ask you.
Yeah.
So it will revolutionize your job mm-hmm. trying to get the bad guys, but isn't it
yep.
also going to
totally.
Revolutionize the way they can get to you?
Yeah.
Because if somebody can call me on the phone, make believe they're my daughter, to keep it really basic,
sure.
and ask me for money, say that I'm stranded mm-hmm. on 34th Street, could you please send me a Venmo money? But it's not my
yeah.
daughter. It's not a true story. Yeah. And that will open up a can of
worms. This is my single greatest fear with AI. I think we've all watched in the past 6+ years what disinformation is doing in
right.
our country.
Yes. Huge.
And a lot of times when you're going to run a disinformation, or we call an information operations campaign, your whole objective is to make someone believe something is real. It's
right.
old school con man game, but
yep.
when you can now replicate voices, you can even if it was a video, it's getting so close now where it's really easy to be completely tricked. And we're already seeing it now. Obviously, this is something the Russians love.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
because,
yeah.
you know, it's a really interesting question. How's a democracy with free and open comms
right. protect themselves against this?
Protect themselves in 2024 and
right.
beyond? Because it's, you know, people are now weaponizing information, really disinformation
right.
to convince large swaths of people something exists when it could be complete, you know, nonsense.
And it could
That's
be relative to defense.
Fear.
It could be
yeah.
relative to politics. It could be relative to virtually anything.
It's literally... It's so bad. I mean, we've seen these cases where teenagers, you know, are meeting people and talking to them online, and they're getting extorted. And
yeah.
sometimes this ruins their life so bad.
Yeah.
You know, they do drastic things and take their own lives. And when you think about AI and how you can make anyone believe, I always said you can trick any human once.
Yes.
You know, and that's my single greatest fear is the disinformation. How it intertwines with politics
right.
and how other companies like use it or countries use it and weaponize against us because
right.
we can't just cut down comms and silos of comms. You know, we're not
right.
China,
yeah.
But or Russia or Iran or North Korea.
Correct.
That's my single greatest fear. I think
to maintain freedom as we know it to the best of our ability
yeah.
while still keep putting walls up to be protected.
Yeah. And having a sense of truth. Or something
yeah.
as close as we can get
yeah.
to it, you know?
Which is scary. We're just seeing that over the last couple of years in a big way.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, 85% truth or 90% truth and 10% disinformation is the way to trick humans.
Yes.
Because there's enough checks in their mind, this must be real.
Right.
And AI is just going to really speed up what can happen there. That's my greatest fear of AI.
Yeah.
Everything else, I see huge advantages,
right.
huge advantages.
Yeah.
It's really impressive. And like, look, NVIDIA, I mean,
correct.
They're like the AI processing machine, you know, with their GPU calculators. Now they're dedicated, you know, kind of AI built
yeah.
processors. So.
And that is, so it is important to note that there are incredible benefits of AI,
incredible.
Whether it's healthcare, whether it's logistics, any number of things.
Right.
But it's clear that people need to know to be on guard because we are about to embark on a new generation mm-hmm. where we may be on a daily basis, and we are. Think about your phone and the fact that I can think about going to the Dominican Republic for the weekend and think about it, and suddenly I'm being presented offers to fly yeah. there. You know, like, how did that happen?
Yeah.
That's just the beginning. That's yeah. a little bit, or any of the other things. So you are involved with Black Point.
Yep.
Okay. Check out Black Point, everybody. But what you're doing from a corporate side, I want to ask you,
yeah.
what are your clients? What industries? Are they across the board in different industries?
Our direct customers are companies that do IT for other companies.
Oh, okay.
Which yeah, means right. are the end customer yeah, we're protecting.
Yeah, yeah, right, that makes sense.
Absolutely everything you can even imagine. Right. I mean, we have jails, you name it.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Jails, little manufacturers. The number one vertical in this field is healthcare. It's about 19% of our revenue.
Is it our data, our personal data that's being compromised, or what else in healthcare?
It's personal data because it's really good to extort because all right. the HIPAA fines.
Yes,
it's kind of exactly. weird. You
that's
have a regulation
yep.
to try and
protect
you know,
that
and protect it, but it's almost like even if you do a lot of things right and you miss one little patch, you
suddenly get, you, that door where you've
it's kinda like,
you've aggregated all that stuff, you yeah. get in that door, we're screwed.
And it's kind of like you get punished for getting mugged some cases. Now, the truth isn't, it's not that black and white, right?
Right.
I think healthcare is a really big one. You know, hospitals, ambulatory care right, centers, right, surgery right. centers, the ransomware operators love them because not only is will the data, if they release it, cause nonstop lawsuits,
right.
it also, you got to think, just a nursing home, when they go down,
right.
they lose all the prescriptions for their
right.
patients.
Right.
Their dietary restrictions,
right.
all that stuff.
Goes we're talking
down.
Life and death in many
yeah.
ways, right?
Yeah. And so it's that's why healthcare is targeted frequently.
Wow.
You know, the defense sector is targeted probably a lot more by nation states because
right.
they
right.
want intelligence,
sure. right.
which is totally normal.
Yep.
I mean, I remember we did a response. The Chinese came in to a 20 person manufacturer.
Right.
You know, through an exploit on the firewall, got in, yada, yada. We watched them move and we stopped them before they got there. Right to a CNC machine.
What's a CNC machine?
Basically, you take a computer-aided design file.
Okay.
And it cuts like a billet of aluminum into something. It could be an oil cooler.
Oh, okay.
It
understood.
Could be whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you think about it, those machines usually have an old computer that you can't patch because it was like a Windows 7 or something like
right.
that. But let's say it's in a part for a spacecraft.
Right.
You hit that CNC machine, you take the AutoCAD, all you have to do is get the same materials, you bring it back to China or wherever it is,
right.
you load it up, now you have a production-ready part, and this is intellectual property theft 101 that is just pilfering American countries right now. And this is specifically what the Chinese really love to do because we do all the R&D, we spend all the money, they hack us, and they say, thank you very much.
Yeah.
And that's not something the U.S. government does. That is, that's illegal.
Right.
We don't do
everything right, but okay, I get that.
Yeah, we have boundaries on that stuff. And so that's a huge threat
to
this country and our innovation. Right. I mean, because they just, we take all the time to learn and then they take it and mass produce it and you're done. I mean, it's a big, big deal, not only on just defense stuff.
Right.
It could be electric car information, you name it.
Right. What about things like, obviously, so many of manufacturing is being done now by computers.
Yeah.
Think about if you're making a steel girder
yeah.
and the whole formation of that piece of steel and its level of strength and whatnot, and somebody goes in and changes something in there so that creates a weakness in it.
Yeah.
I mean, you're just making me think about all the, you know, the what's in the nooks and crannies of our
yeah.
life on a daily basis that is hackable.
Yeah.
Right. And that could jeopardize people's lives and infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. I mean, that's
that's
logistics.
That's been going on a really long time with all the nation states, you know, on the sabotage front. Right.
Right.
And sometimes it could be computer. Sometimes, you know, maybe a foreign service can intercept a part and swap it out for bad parts.
Right.
You
yeah.
Don't
yeah.
Know,
that's
right?
I
think that's been happening for decades.
Right.
I think to me, in most manufacturing, the biggest risk is you think about a tire company.
Right.
Tire companies, when you actually look at it, it looks just like a nuclear weapons lab. They have huge modeling and simulations. The technology that goes into making a tire.
Right.
Picture like a big construction tire, just the time to cast and cure. They have to model how the materials move around.
Right.
And then you have to go produce it on the floor and then get it to the right door, have a label, because they all look, you know, black. They don't have like stickers on it. That is all enabled by IT systems. Yeah. And so the biggest thing I always advise companies in manufacturing, separate your manufacturing network totally from your corporate network.
Yep.
Because you don't want your corporate network to go down, then manufacturing goes down hard. Manufacturers they seem to go down the hardest from a ransomware attack. It's just, especially modern manufacturers.
So look, with all this being said, you've got to wonder, there's a part of me. So when I got down to the floor of the exchange, everything was done on paper. It was open outcry. It's what I fell in love with the day I walked in here. Yeah. The adrenaline, the excitement, the chaos. It's what I thrive on. I love to scream and yell and trade millions of shares and la, la, la. That's how this happened for years and decades. That's where we're on. That's what used to go on here. And I was actually and slowly as technology came into all of our worlds, this was one of the businesses that it really lagged because we loved that open outcry. Yeah. We love that human element. For me, I'm a humanist, is what I call myself. I love what goes on between one human being to another is so powerful relative to how we hide behind computer. And as I said, I don't even own a computer.
Right.
So I'm a bit of a disruptor, my own personal disruption. It's probably not serving me that well. But I really held on for dear life as technology started coming into our business here, where we got the Palm Pilot. We traded with that. Didn't work. And then all the different alliterations of the handheld computer that we now use to actually trade stock. And so, you know, people call this advancement and they call it, you know, whatever. There's a part of me that, you know, and I don't mean to be like an old suit or anything, but there's a part of me that would, first of all, love to go back to the old open outcry and take computers and technology out of our system. Back then, before we had all this technology, we had 8,000 people here. We had 5 rooms.
It's unbelievable.
You know, the human element. We are the last. So think about it. There were markets around the world that were manned by humans for 100 years. We are now the last human interactive marketplace in the world. That's a shame in its own right.
Yeah.
But I'd love to go back to that. And so we think of the technology coming into our world and all that has, you know, obviously there are major benefits, as I said, major benefits with AI, but obviously there are things that are detrimental to our lives. And, you know, if you weigh it, I'm sure you must think about that at some point, you know, look, it was a spy sitting with another spy over a coffee and a pack of cigarettes in the middle of Malta, you know, in 1920.
Pretty exciting.
Right. Yeah. And then now you've got, you know, this cyber wild, you know, you've got Matt Damon scooting around on all, you know. So you're wondering, you know, where do the benefits outweigh the negative parts of this thing?
You know, I think there's definitely human interactions changing. And I think a lot of times it's not better. And you lose those personal bonds. I mean, I can tell you right now, we're moving our headquarters. We haven't announced this publicly, but I guess we are now to Denver. And you know why? Sales development, business development reps. Can you imagine graduating from college?
Right.
Congrats. Welcome to your first day of the job. And you sit at home and you don't get to meet those people, form those friendships, those bonds.
Yep.
You know, we're still totally remote first company. It's just you can't get elite talent if you don't embrace that fully. And you have to embrace all the tech. But we're seeing increasing need to find some like more middle ground between, you know, COVID operations and now. And yeah, we're starting to bring folks back together. We're making sure our executives are out. Get on a plane. Go meet people. Get them together. Like, we have to form these bonds, because in any great elite operation, unit cohesion wins.
Yeah. Right? I'm with you so severely, because I don't get the fact that we could go on and talk forever. And
I know,
love this. But I still don't get the fact. I get it that people, look, I got COVID on March 15th. I was patient zero. I was given 4 days to live. I got meningitis. I've had 9 surgeries. It changed my life and ruined my life in very many ways. So, and I get that. And people stayed home. There was remote living and all that. But, you know, I still don't get the fact that so many people have not come back to work. I mean, the minute I got to go back to work, I came back to work. Yeah. And I get that. And people seem to think that they're not missing out on anything, productivity, that human interaction, what you and I can achieve by shaking each other's hand, whether it's a hug or not, and looking in each other's eyes from that it's a whole, it's a human thing that almost can't be described in words, that happens in business. It happens in the integrity of a relationship. It surely must happen in your work, because if we're talking about the mask that we are, that is, and the wall that is in between us and reality, that, you know, you and me sitting across from each other at a desk will definitely override so much of even cybersecurity.
Yeah.
Right. I'm sure you can sit down. You've been in the business across from someone, and whether you've got systems that will be able to identify whether this guy's a bad actor or not, I'm sure you have the potential as a human being in this business to look at the guy and know the minute you see him and shake his hand, this is a bad actor.
Yeah. Yeah. It's changing. I think it's going to create a really interesting culture and weird social skills, I think, is going to come out of this kind of COVID generation. I think,
and I'm not sure they may not be that great.
I think it's a problem. So I think it's like, you know, leaders of companies, like, I fully understand. We actually got a lot of productivity increase going remote. I mean, because commute times.
Did get productivity.
Oh yeah, big time. Okay. So you think in software development, they spend 45 minutes commuting. They BS at when they get to the office.
Right, I get that. Yeah,
I tell you, my.
That's the cup half full on this one. Yeah.
The point that really clicked for me, COVID had just hit.
Right.
I pulled the plug and sent everyone home even before the states were doing it. I was so worried about our 24/7 SOC getting sick and passing around the shift and taking us down hard.
Right.
We went home. We rethought our entire, it was the best thing that ever happened to our business. Mm-hmm. We were always Baltimore, DC centric. We started hiring the best talent no matter where they lived. And that really enabled growth. And what convinced me to do it, we were much smaller then, but I brought my executive team to my house on the deck, bought them food, had a whiteboard out there.
And a mask.
And and the first thing, we were starting to use the whiteboard and we're like, this is stupid. And everyone opened their laptop, created a virtual meeting on Teams because it's a lot easier to annotate our designs. And I was like, this can work. But now having run a really remote company for years, and that's growing, you know, we added 100 people last year. We have to get people back together more often because, you know, that creates trust, unit cohesion. You know, so we work hard in doing like, you know, leadership offsites where we bring former special operations guys and folks from the White House to, you know, kind of give these people these skills. And I think that is that we have to find that happy balance where you get the productivity remote, we get the best talent, but we got to get it. People have to form interpersonal bonds and it doesn't happen that strongly.
In everything, in life, in relationships, in business, and surely in your business.
Yeah.
I could talk to you forever. This is so exciting. We'll have to do it. You know what? Next time I'm coming out to Vail.
Yeah,
we'll do.
Come skiing.
We'll come ski and we'll do an interview there.
Done.
Guys, one of the most exciting interviews ever. This is clearly, and look, this is the future. It's the future in a good way, future in a bad way. You know, to know that there's somebody like John out there with a company that is out there to protect our integrity as human beings, as business people in manufacturing. I mean, this, you know, this story is boom, man. It's like so much bigger than I even thought, right? There's so much to it. Are you hiring?
We are hiring like crazy.
BlackPoint is hiring, right? And I would imagine you want to hire people before they develop bad habits from their other jobs.
Yep.
You want them fresh out of college, right?
Well, both. I mean, for fresh out of college and then elite. We're in the trust selling and backing up business.
Right.
We can't have the most elite operations. Yeah. You think about a 20. I always picture it this way. Imagine if your parents owned a 20-person manufacturer their whole life in a small town. And they get ransomware for millions of dollars. It puts them out of business. That's what's at stake. People's jobs, their livelihoods when we fail. So we need to develop this next awesome generation of talent because they're all digital natives, digital first, or that really helps. But then we need elite talent, you know, with experience.
Elite talent at BlackPoint. I'm the Einstein of Wall Street here. Trade like Einstein for Money News Network. John, an absolute pleasure.
Check
them out. This is the greatest, man.
Thanks,
Thank
man.
You.
Thank you.
And that's all I got to say about that.